everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always, when we delve back 20 years to see what the WWF is offering on a Monday night, by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing all right. I watched Retro Raw. I was so tired, you guys, watching the show last night, and I'm not super sure I understand what was going on, so I might have questions for Kenny. And I wasn't even drunk or anything, I was just exhausted, so... It got to the point where, like, I rewound a few times to try and figure stuff out, and I was like, no, nope, it's just not happening. And
I have to ask Kenny.
I'll just ask Kenny. It'll be fine. I'm like, did something happen on Heat? What did happen on Heat, Kenny?
Yeah, so let's get into that. Well, before we begin that, I do just want to say a couple of things. First of all, our YouTube channel, ladies and gentlemen, out of control. Loads of new subscribers. We're almost up at 91,500. The road to 100 is real, so that's amazing. We got a new clip up there with Mick Foley with a really funny
story. It's really good. I watched it last night.
There you go. He's got a really funny story about the Hall of Fame and a pitch that he made to Vince. Does his Vince impression. It's very good. So go check that out. Also, we made it into the Wrestling Observer newsletter last week because our clip that we put out with Paul Heyman talking about on-screen GMs were quoted in there on that. So all good stuff, really. Got another tour in the bag that we're going to be announcing this coming week. Speaking of tours, our awesome Kong tour is going to be coming to Birmingham, London, Manchester and Glasgow this August. You can get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. What I will say, in the reason of honesty, this may be our last time to come to Birmingham, because Birmingham has now a few times underperformed to every other city, and this is the last chance saloon. So if you're in Birmingham or around it, even just come as a general mission and just sort of show up, and it can sort of justify us maybe coming back there. But otherwise, it's looking like it might be our last. But if you want to, you know, come and show us support, insidetheropes.co.uk is where you get tickets for that. And obviously Glasgow, Manchester and London, the usual haunts, we will be coming there as well, August 19th to August 22nd. So, however, you did ask me about Heat. So, on Sunday Night Heat, the night before this show, what window did I have it on?
Anticipation is killing me.
So on Heat, we had opened up a really fun tag match. We had X-Pac and Kane against the Hardy Boys. Really good fun. In the end, X-Pac and
that
Kane.
That sounds great.
It was. And then they won the match. Then the Acolytes came out. They just, I now understand another thing that you're going to be like, what? Get it now. Okay, never mind. So the Acolytes came out to destroy the Hardys. And then Kane makes a save and tombstones Bradshaw on the steel steps, which then leads to Bradshaw not being medically cleared for the following night, which is why that angle happened on Raw. Then we get a Rock Chef Boyardee commercial, which we got on this show, which we will be discussing in detail in a little while.
Oh, we sure will.
The Undertaker came out, said that he's challenging Austin to a first blood match at Fully Loaded because he enjoyed the taste of Austin's blood that week. Midian, who found
the Undertaker being a vampire again then? Like, yes. Has he gotten with Gangrel? Are they comparing notes?
I think so, and Undertaker's winning in the... Undertaker's got a faction. He managed to convince a corporation to join him, and he has made the world champion bleed. Gangrel can't even go in with his pals.
It's true.
So, you know, another fail for Gangrel. Anyway, so European title...
Poor Gangrel.
Well, not really. Midian has the European title, so he now apparently can defend it. So he defends it.
Why does... this was one of my questions. Why does Midian have the European title?
This happened a couple weeks ago on Raw, where he went up to Shane McMahon and he said, oh, I found this belt. I don't have a belt. Can I get the belt in your bag? And he's like, yeah, do whatever you want. And the belt that he
found... I didn't realize he meant that belt.
Yes.
I thought he just meant like a normal belt to hold up pants or whatever. So he took the European title from Shane's bag.
Yes, which apparently Shane carries around in his bag, but he retired.
So
it's like an onion peeling these layers.
Okay. Like that, I was so confused by this. I was so confused with it because I remembered him asking to like borrow an item of clothing from Shane McMahon. I did not realize that he was like, can I have the European championship?
I mean, look, Midian, I'm not going to say this very often, but Midian was quite clever here. Because he did ask, can I borrow a belt? Shane said yes.
It's true.
Shane didn't
it's
say
true.
You can borrow any belt but my European Championship belt, which I weirdly carry around for some reason. Anyway, so Midian decides on Heat to defend the European title against Al Snow. The announcers are like, we don't actually know how Midian is the champion, but I guess he is.
Question mark?
Question mark. And then D'Lo ends up running for the DQ, so we get kind of D'Lo and Al Brown, which then D'Lo and Al Brown, D'Lo and Al Snow, which obviously plays into Raw. Stephanie is doing an interview, kind of, trying to defuse the GTV situation with Test. Test then gets an Intercontinental title shot, which obviously makes sense because he did win the Intercontinental title a couple of weeks ago in Heat, which was then reversed. And
Yeah, that's a title shot that actually I can get behind.
yes,
Because there's some sort of logic there.
there is. And then Test ends up getting attacked by Joey Abs, the new member of the Mean Street Posse, gets DQ'd. Well, another DQ. Hardcore Holly issues an open challenge, and Viscera comes out. Now, here's where this show gets a bit crazy. Which, once this is explained, should hopefully explain why you are, I think, very baffled about something. So,
Okay.
Hardcore Holly faces Viscera. Viscera's beating the shit out of him, but then he does the big splash and he misses. So Hardcore Holly just grabs a chair and starts whacking the shit out of him. The bell doesn't ring, but I guess we assume it's a DQ because it's this episode of
Because,
Heat, so it seems to be.
yeah.
So then, Bob Holly just stops beating up Viscera and cuts a promo on Kane. So Kane comes out and choke slams him, but then the Big Show comes out to try and beat up Kane, which brings out the Undertaker to try and back up his brother.
Okay.
So we are basically at this point, we're like, okay, so Big Show was going to try and kill Kane. So the Undertaker has chosen this moment to, leave the bosom of his world championship chance and story and come and look out for his brother a little bit. So we don't really know what's happening. Obviously, that plays into Raw a little bit, but yeah, I now
So we don't know
realize.
why the Undertaker is like just back with Kane though, right? Like it just happens, like he just
Well,
saves him.
he just came out to save him because the Big Show was going to beat him up. So at the moment, we're kind of meant to believe, well, are they together? Are they not? And then the story does play out in a way that we get answers to everything. So it's not like it's just like a let's bring an Undertaker for a random thing. So that's what happened on Heat, which led into the Raw
Okay.
thing. But I can now understand why, because I don't think they mentioned it. So I think that for you, even about what? Is this one of the
Because
things you were
they
baffled
like,
about?
yeah. Because I think when Kane comes out for his match, he has a match with the Big Show on this episode of Raw, right? So he comes out for this match, and they're like talking about how there's speculation about how the Undertaker and Kane are back together, and I'm like, what? When? Why? Like, for what reason? I was so confused by that.
Well, I mean, at least there's an answer. At least
Yeah.
it's not just
Which
like.
is, I figured something must have happened on Heat because they didn't like with the Bradshaw injury thing. They did show footage from Heat, and they like said that he was concussed, and they showed him getting a concussion and stuff. So because they were talking about how his brains were all scrambled, it made me very uncomfortable. But at least they explained that he had some sort of injury. The Undertaker Kane thing just seemed to come out of nowhere. I was just like, I don't understand, and I don't really want them back together. So. It's not like my choice that this be happening, but we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we will see where it goes. And then what else do we get on Heat? So then we have a tag team match to blow off the feud of the Godfather and Val Venus against Droz and Prince Albert. But the stipulation is that if Droz and Albert lose, they have to be the Godfather's hoes for a night. And if Val Venus and
Oh,
if Val Venus
okay.
and Godfather lose, then Val Venus has to be pierced by Droz and Prince Albert. So
Okay.
for those who are not on Patreon, I'm going to bring this behind the paywall thought to the main podcast. I don't think the Godfather thought through the stipulation here, because if the Godfather is using his hoes to A, either make money from the ladies, or he
Which, I
is.
mean, we've questioned the Godfather's economic practices before on this podcast. That's nothing new. I don't think he's a very good pimp.
However, if he's also trying sometimes to be like, if he can't be bothered wrestling, he can just offer up the bevy of one or two of his ladies to an opponent, right? That's the rule. Droz and Prince Albert is going to take away business. Like, it's not going to add business. Like, if you
I mean, there may be a market for that.
if you're facing Vader, he's not taking Droz and Albert. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just not. And then the main event of the show was Road Dogg versus Big Show, where Big Show actually did a power slam at one point. He missed an elbow. Kane comes out for the DQ because, of course, just why not? And then, obviously, Godfather of Harvey's won, by the way. X-Pac comes out to try and stop Kane and Big Show from fighting. And then Undertaker comes out and just sort of stares at everything that's going on. So again, you're meant to just kind of believe what is the Undertaker's motivation? What's going on? And that's how we left Heat. So it was a pretty decent cliffhanger. And it was a decent episode of Heat. It was Sunday night disqualification.
Right.
That was
which is kind of what you expect from Heat.
Yes. So yeah, also I was going to bring up last week, I think a chance to, there was a couple of media notes to make, which were that Rina Mero, aka Sable, appeared on the Jay Leno show, but she wasn't allowed to be called Sable. The notes of stuff that she said, she talked about how the obscenity and the vulgarity in the WWF had gotten out of hand. She'd never participate in the WWF again unless things changed. When she got asked about the name Sable, all she would say was that it was up to the courts to decide, and Jay Leno told her that he hoped that she wins the lawsuit. Can you imagine? Can you imagine in 2019 a WWE wrestler who is in a lawsuit for like over $100 million just going on Jay Leno and talking about it?
No, I cannot imagine that. I really cannot imagine that at all.
I'd like to think...
Because it's crazy. Like, there would be so many countersuits and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely insane.
Which, like, how were there not, like, legal ramifications for her? Like, you're not really supposed to discuss an ongoing case publicly.
Well, I think the idea that she didn't actually talk about the case, she just said it's up to the courts to decide. She kind of avoided talking about it, but he was...
She didn't really, like, give any details or anything, but
yeah,
still.
He just said, you know, what's going on with the name Sable? And she just said, that's up for the courts to decide. But still, okay. she got it in there. She was advertising TV lessons all week, and in promos as Sable. But that night, he had to call her Rina Mero. One of the notes was she got a tepid reaction and showed very little in the way of charisma or personality in the setting to an audience that didn't really seem to know who she was or care. Now, Envy, who's booking
what?
Her,
you mean Sable was lacking in charisma? I'm shocked by this.
I mean, I feel like if you're like, okay, I'm gonna try and get somebody from the WWF. Sable's not your choice, but there you
go.
No. Then we got Hulk Hogan appearing on Larry King Live on CNN. He was there for the full 60 minutes, which is a huge PR, you know, get for WCW. Here's how he was described in the Observer for his performance. If transparently self-serving and oftentimes dishonest, his performance was transparently self-serving and oftentimes dishonest. A show which has been criticised heavily by television critics for Hogan getting an entire 60 minutes with claims of conflict of interest due to CNN and WCW both being under the Time Warner umbrella and claiming the news show wouldn't have been used for an appearance that had no news value and was strictly for promotional purposes for a sister company. So I guess it's up to you to decide whether that would fall into that bracket or not.
Does.
I guess it just, yeah, 100% it does. And I mean, maybe it's just because I'm used to, you know, 2019 cable news just being a dumpster fire all the time with special interests and all that kind of stuff. So it doesn't really seem that out with normal proceedings to
later in 1999, it was late 98 when Hogan announced that he was running for president of the United States.
What?
You never heard of this?
No.
Came out on Nitro, complete PR stunt, announced he was running for president.
Oh, gosh.
Then you bring him on Larry fucking King. Then you go, what do you think of the Lewinsky situation, Hulk? Just, you know, ask him questions. But, yeah, so there was that.
He was commenting on Lewinsky situation?
No, I'm saying if he was running for president, that's something you could ask him about. Like, you know, he was caught with his pants down.
Oh,
with
yeah,
an intern
yeah.
under the desk. What are you going to do if you run the White House? Also, Vince McMahon was interviewed by Matt Lauer on the Today Show. Also, he was on the Conan Show. But the Matt Lauer interview... So, the Conan Show you can actually see on YouTube. And it's quite... Like, the whole time, Conan basically just makes fun of wrestling and Vince just kind of laughs along. And it's frustrating to watch. Like, if you're a wrestling fan, you kind of want to just punch Conan O'Brien in the face. Because he's just being stupid.
Really?
Yeah, like, he's just treating wrestling... Oh. He's just treating wrestling like it's a joke, you know, like his show.
I hate that.
Yeah, so he just wasn't like, Yeah, and it wasn't for me. But the
He's
problem is,
gotten better with having wrestlers on his show since then, right? Because like I've seen him interview some wrestlers, and he's like I could think he's maybe a little jokey about it, but he's probably kind of like realized that it's actually kind of fucking cool.
yeah, well, one would hope so. But you can check it out on YouTube if you want to see that one. But the lower one, bear in mind, this is June of 1999. So there's a moment where Matt Lauer is talking about wrestling being popular, and Vince interrupts him and says, "It isn't pro wrestling that's popular; it's the WWF that's
Oh,
popular."
wow.
Burn. And
And
then,
also untrue at this point, right? Like, WCW is still a thing.
yeah, I mean, they've kind of fallen a little. I mean, look, the cracks are now real and stuff, but like they're still pulling
Right,
in
but they're
millions
still
of viewers a week.
there. It's
Yeah.
not like it's 2001 at this point. Like, we're still in 1999, where WCW is still a force. I mean, I would say wrestling is probably still more popular at that point than, like, right now, it almost seems like WWE is probably more popular because, AEW is just starting up and whatnot. But then there were two viable companies.
There were. But the main thing was that, and I don't know why they didn't see this coming, and maybe they wanted to, maybe he felt he had to go into a public forum, but basically he was asked a lot about the death of Owen Hart. He said that Owen had never expressed concern to anyone in the company who were doing the stunt, that if he had, then they wouldn't have done the stunt. They rehearsed it earlier in the day. Because I don't know if we mentioned that, but he did rehearse it fully earlier that day. So I guess that's
I don't
like,
remember if we mentioned it or not,
but
but
if you know, if you're trying to sort of not defend the company, but can I say, well, why did they do? I mean, they had done it that day, but that doesn't, which doesn't really help with the rigging that wasn't right. Anyway, Vince blamed the lawsuit on the family being too quick to go to the attorneys, and the McMahons are very, very open and willing. They want to make a financial settlement, said it'd be the right thing for Martha and Owen's kids. But he wouldn't admit to any responsibility, saying that people need to wait for the investigation to be complete. He told Martha over the phone the week after Owen's death, about that, and to contact the attorneys in Kansas City. They want to investigate it and see why it happened. There's a clip of Jesse Ventura saying that they show him that says that today's pro wrestling is getting out of control, as they want to do stuntman spots and the wrestlers should be trained as stuntmen and be part of the stuntman's union. And Vince said that Ventura has been out of the business for some time and maybe he's not up to speed on current conditions. Vince called Owen's entrance a routine thing, comparing it with Peter Pan and Garth Brooks. And then says,
Peter Pan and Garth Brooks.
And then he goes on to say, Time Warner's wrestling company has done it dozens and dozens of times with the same rigor. Obviously, they were talking about Sting. The problem was that the person they hired had claimed to be the person that did Stings, but he was only an assistant to the person that did Stings. That is
Right.
where the problem comes in. Yeah, to try and compare stunt stuff, I mean, that really makes it look bad that you didn't, have, you didn't have multiple people doing it, you didn't have people checked to do it. Matt Lauer brought up Bret Hart's comments about the direction of wrestling, about how bad it is, and then Vince responded by labeling Bret Hart as disgruntled, saying his popularity has plummeted since leaving the WWF and he's got a personal agenda. Eek.
Eek.
So,
That sounds like it's getting messy. It's so unfortunate that Vince wouldn't say, like, I don't know. I get why he's not claiming responsibility, because if he claims responsibility and that's on record, then like they can use that in the lawsuits and stuff. But it just seems like it would be a classier thing to do to say, this happened on our watch. It was a terrible accident that happened. Like something like that, where you're admitting, like, yes, this did happen on your watch. It was a terrible accident. Like, it's not like you were culpable and that you like planned and plotted his death, like some people are saying. But like, your people fucked up, and a man's dead, and that fucking sucks. So, claim some responsibility for that.
And with Hogan's appearance on Larry King, he said that he left the WWF in 1983 because he was being singled out with Vince for the steroid controversy. I mean, that's an actual lie. He left because he didn't want to pass the torch to Bret Hart, but that's fine. And said that athletes in every sport use steroids and continued to use steroids even after the law was changed, which I guess you're accusing people of a felony. If he was asked if he takes steroids now after the law was changed, Hogan said that he had. But it sounded like he'd misinterpreted the question. He lied a lot. And then the
Shocking.
in a kind of set up spot, they asked about Owen Hart. Larry King said, "You were very close to him," and Hulk Hogan bowed his
Was
head.
he?
Never said he. But so when Larry King said you were very close to him, Hogan kind of bows his head. He doesn't say he was or deny it, but the impression given to people at home was that they were in somehow fairly close, which I've never heard in my life. He said that Owen Hart's drop was supposed to be a spoof to make fun of Bret and himself. What?
What?
Why
Hogan
would?
doesn't rappel.
I mean, he. Yeah. Anyway. And he said, you know, Owen wasn't trained for the stunt and was a good enough wrestler. He didn't need to be put in that position. The Sable. He was asked about the Sable lawsuit, and he said that stuff was drawing ratings, and that the people in charge put models aside and go with what works for business. Well, fucking pot and kettle there, love. He said that he can't let his children watch the WWF and said the American public would get their belly full and said how WCW promotes a product that kids can watch. They then show him clips of.
What?
Yep. They then show a clip from Jesse Ventura talking about Hogan going to Vince to nix the union. Hogan, you'll be shocked, ladies and gentlemen, denies the story.
Wow.
And said that.
I'm shocked by all of these lies.
And Hulk Hogan said the following about Jesse Ventura, that Jesse's story is false and that Jesse's stories about his wrestling career get bigger and bigger as time goes by.
Hulk Hogan said this about another human being in a negative. I'm sorry, I just
So
can't.
the final one which makes me laugh was SummerSlam 92 was in Wembley Stadium and Hulk Hogan was not with the company at that point. Now he did write in his book that he came up with. Have you ever heard the Hulkamaniacs in Heaven song that he wrote, that he did?
No.
I mean, we
Is
make
it like
we
about dead kids?
no, he talks about like there's Hulkamaniacs in Heaven, and it's because
What?
he was inspired to write the song when he met a dying Hulkamaniac as a Make-A-Wish kid.
No, like Hulkamaniacs in Heaven sounds like, you know, a bunch of Make-A-Wish kids who are dead now.
That's the
Like, that
so,
sounds horrendous.
but he when he said that he got the what's the word? The inspiration to write it at Wembley Stadium. He wasn't on that show. So further to that,
Was he just wandering around one day
yeah,
and
he random yeah, he flew
went to Wembley?
he flew to London for no reason.
Just to walk around, just to see the sights.
Hulk then said about Jesse Ventura, there was a time in the WWF when they were wrestling at Wembley Stadium, and Ventura was talking about a union strongly then. So they were talking about a union at a time when neither man worked for the company.
Of course.
And
Of
also,
course,
just
that makes
to
all the sense in the world.
if maybe see if Hogan got it wrong and he was talking about Wembley Arena. They never wrestled in Wembley Arena till 1991 and Jesse Ventura left in 1990. He blamed Jesse for having a grudge against him because Ventura asked him to help him campaign when he was running for mayor of Brooklyn Park, and due to his own political affiliations at the time he didn't. And then he threw the biggest dig at Jesse Ventura, saying they were friends at one time in the old days. We were on the road, always went we on when we were on the road, we always went to Jesse's room to party because he had everything to party with.
Great. Does that just mean that's where they kept all the drugs?
Yes. He and then the, when the pres they did bring up the presidency thing to him. He said the people at Time Warner wanted to get him to run for president. When asked who, he'd only say Eric Bischoff. He said that he'd never committed to running, and that he'd made the announcement he was running on Jay Leno. He just said it was a publicity stunt. And then he just goes on. He did. Larry King scoffed at his ability to debate people like Al Gore. He and
Can you imagine Hulk Hogan debating Al Gore?
I wish it had happened.
Like, that's something I actually
All
want to see.
he was able to say was flat tax and putting America first.
Wow.
About Vince McMahon, he said, I have a lot of respect for how he's taking care of his family. As far as a businessman, his theme of ride the horse until it drops, shoot it, then eat the horse, I don't agree with. His theme of ride the horse until it drops, shoot it, then eat the horse.
Then eat the horse. Is that like the analogy for how he treats wrestlers?
So, I mean, I know that I've spent a good 20 minutes on those. I feel like it was a justified 20 minutes that we were filled in on these happenings
I feel like it's been worth it. I really do.
from wrestlers and the media. Okay, so this episode of Raw, July 5th, 1999. This episode of Raw almost got a 6.0 in the ratings. Nitro got a 3.4 this week, so they really are starting to overtake. Austin's out first. The crowd are going crazy for him. He says, you know, because they've got a video package that kind of shows last week and then shows the challenge on Heat. Austin said he's not a hard man to find. He'll do the first blood match. Here comes Vince McMahon, who has a very weird, like, polo t-shirt on with a very bad 1970s suit jacket.
Like, Vince is a strange look.
Vince is usually quite on point with his suits. This was a big step down. I don't know what happened to him this week.
Did he lose his luggage or something?
You'd hope.
Did he? Because it's quite the combination.
So, basically, Vince comes out and says, you know, he's come to realize that the WWF is not big enough for the two of them. So, somebody's got to go. So he says that he's so confident Undertaker will beat him at Fully Loaded that if Undertaker loses, Vince McMahon will go away. He will never be seen again. He will not interfere in Austin's business. However, if Austin wins, if Undertaker wins, then Austin never again in his professional career can even attempt to try and gain the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Austin agrees. Austin's going to be able to get his own lawyers to drop the contract. He doesn't trust Vince, which, I mean, is fair, because they were pals, and then he betrayed them by being higher power. So,
right.
Fair. And then we get a beer. So it didn't go on as long as some of the usual open segments. I'm curious about what you make of the stipulation and the idea of kind of like, the WWF's not big enough for the both of us. What did you make of it?
I mean, that's interesting, I guess. And it makes sense because Vince McMahon is, like, ridiculous. It made me laugh when Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out at first and he's like, you've spent months being, you know, like, having this master plan or whatever. And I took those plans, I ripped them up, and I shoved them up your ass. It's like he's really pointing out that Vince's plan is real stupid. Like, I still don't understand to what end all of this higher power stuff was, because, it hasn't accomplished anything. Austin's still the champion. You let Austin be champion on the way to revealing yourself as the higher power because it was, like, mind games or something. Vince McMahon is just not very good at long-term planning, I think is what we've learned here. And so I feel like this stipulation could very well bite him in the ass as well, because he didn't say that he would go away and never be seen again, right? Didn't he say that he would put it in writing that he wouldn't interfere in Austin's business?
Yeah, he also did say at one point, Vince, you will never see Vince McMahon again, is what he said. Now,
is that what he said? Okay.
I think,
like, I was tired, so I could have missed out parts of this.
You maybe have a spoiler that you do see him again at some point.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm pretty sure we do see Vince McMahon again in the World Wrestling Federation / World Wrestling Entertainment sometime between 1999 and 2019. I just have a feeling.
Do you think he, just as a, right, so let's just as a, say, I'm not giving away what the finish is of this match, but just for fun, shits and giggles, let's fantasy book. If Vince McMahon was to have to go away because of the main event food, how long would you think he would be away for?
1 week.
1 week.
Maybe. What, he might maybe show up the next night.
He might be on Heat. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust those stipulations. Like, that's the thing, is that if I trusted that they would actually stick to this, then this could be really interesting, right? Because we, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin can never again in his professional career go for the championship. Well, now, we know that that's not true. We know that he is going to go for the championship again at some point in his career. So, like, that leads me to believe that The Undertaker loses this match. But I've seen this match before. I know I watched it back in the day, but I don't remember the finish of it. So I, like, this is all just me speculating, right? Like, I don't know what happens. So, like, I would think that Austin would win and, like, keep his championship and, you know, reign over the World Wrestling Federation, and Vince McMahon would have to go away. But, like, I also don't trust that Vince McMahon is going to go away, because I know the McMahons are all over television, like, forever, for the rest of my life. So, I don't know. Like, I'm just kind of baffled by it. I guess it's one of those stipulations that's so severe that I don't trust that they're going to hold to it.
the thing that I will give, like, this time period of WWF / WWE is that when they do stipulations, you know, if they do renege on them, they're usually, they at least attempt to give you some form of story, right? Like, and
right.
Whereas now, it's just like, there's a lot of little nuanced things that they could do. I'm not saying it would make the story perfect, but, like, I appreciate when there's an attempt, you know?
Yeah, at least try.
Like, we talked about the whole thing about, there was, I can't remember if it was you and me and Finn, and we were talking about Shane could have done something in a segment to explain something very recently. And it'd been like a 30-second explanation that didn't make sense. But yeah,
And we talked about something like that. I mean, that seems like that could be so many things.
It could, yeah. So, but yeah, the segment here was fun enough. Austin's over huge. Crowd love him.
Yeah, and it's fine. And I'm happy to see Austin. And I like Austin just pointing out that Vince McMahon is full of shit. So that's fine.
The Rock has arrived after the break. Michael Cole's interviewing him. Rock asks him if he'll wear his new shirt. Cole says yes. The Rock, of course, puts it over his head. And then there's some back and forth there. Michael Cole actually made some very good comedy timing on his head turning. Got to give him that.
That was pretty funny.
Rock said he was going to lay the SmackDown Triple H. Talks about how, gives us the background as to why he has electricity about him. So we got that. He said that Billy Gunn is nothing but a peon to him. I mean, that's Billy Gunn pretty much is booked like a peon, so you can't really complain about that. Said he's going to lay the SmackDown on his candy ass. Takes the shirt off Cole and tells him to finish his catchphrase, and then tells him to shut up before he can and leaves. So, yeah, there you go.
The Rock is funny, but The Rock is kind of a dick.
He is, but I mean, Austin's a dick, you know. It's,
Austin is absolutely a dick. Everyone's a dick.
Everyone's a dick in 1999, apart from Mick Foley, who is the one.
Mick Foley is lovely.
We see about Bradshaw being tombstoned to steel steps. The medic's trying to get him to not wrestle. He tries to leave. The medic tries to grab him. Bradshaw punches him in the face. Quite funny. So
the punch in the face was actually pretty funny.
Which leads us to the Hardy Boys with atrocious techno music against the Acolytes of the tag team titles.
When do the Hardy Boys get their actual theme?
I'm sure they have it by the end of the year. I'm pretty sure.
Because they have it by No Mercy, right? Or is that just a network thing?
No, I think they do have it by No Mercy. So it can't be too long.
Well, I'm so excited for that. When is No Mercy? How far do we have to
October.
Go for that? Okay.
Yeah, because when they are no longer with Michael Hayes, is I'm sure it's not long after that.
Okay.
Actually, a pretty decent match here. Like, Bradshaw and Farouk have been having semi-decent matches recently, which they were not having for a long period of time.
Correct.
Which shows you that Matt and Jeff, even back then, were pretty good. Jeff Hardy ends up... Michael Hayes and Farouk are brawling at one point. Then Jeff Hardy ends up grabbing Michael Hayes' cane and hitting it off Bradshaw's head. Matt hits the top rope DDT. 1, 2, 3, the Hardy Boys are your new WWF Tag Team Champions. They do a promo afterwards where which was actually very well done when they go to interview Michael Hayes first, and he was like, no, they're the champs. It's their time. And then Matt can't even speak because people talk about it being their dream. This was their dream to be tag team champions. So this is a really cool feel-good moment. People don't really associate this as being their first tag title win because it's not like the more famous ones, but I'm curious to what you thought. Did you see it coming? Did you know they won the titles here? And what was your reaction to how it played out?
I didn't know they won the titles here, but I don't know why going into it I thought that they might, and also I really wanted them to because they are not the Acolytes, so that's very helpful in terms of my enjoyment of them. I mean, you're not wrong, the match wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't like my favorite Hardy Boys match that I've ever seen because it did still involve the Acolytes, but the Acolytes and the Hardy Boys work together well, I think, because the Hardys are so like kind of fast and flippy around them that the punchy, plotty boringness of the Acolytes is evened out. Like, the Hardy Boys can kind of make it more interesting around them. So I kind of liked the match and I was really happy with the outcome. Like, I was super pleased for the Hardy Boys. And I think the post-match promo that gets interrupted by GTV was not great. And it really didn't help that, like, I mean, Matt's obviously stumbling over his words. He's really, really happy. He's all like excited and emotional, and it's very sweet, but like, he can't speak. He can't give an interview at this point. It's just not his forte. We know that he goes on to be wonderful and brilliant at speaking and everything, but it's just, this is early days. But it was a nice feel-good moment, which is weird because they're supposed to be dastardly, dastardly heels. Like, this came across as like a really nice, like, moment, even with Michael Hayes being, you know, kind of humble in a weird way and like being like, no, this is their time, let them speak. It came across as a very babyface moment, which, I mean, this is the team that's been attacking everyone out of nowhere and has been dastardly, and Michael Hayes gets up on the apron and distracts everyone. So I don't really understand what they're going for there, but it was really nice, and I like the Hardy Boys a lot. I figured they had to become more of a thing, like, soon-ish. It's one of those situations where, like, because I know what happens at No Mercy, like, I know that we're getting there soon, and I know that they're a much bigger deal, you know, then. So I'm like, maybe they start to move the championships in that direction soon, and I'm kind of glad that they did.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. It was good, and the title change was a nice kind of boost for the tag team division. So good stuff. We then, as Matt's trying to speak, get diverted to GTV with Droz and Albert getting ready. Droz likes getting into the clothing, and Albert does not.
The fact that this was so shocking to JR and Lawler, and Lawler's like, did I hear that correctly? And JR's like, I think you did, unfortunately. He likes wearing a dress. Gasp, horror, the worst thing in the world.
Yes. I mean, look, it's what the time was, it is what it is. It's obviously, if we talk about it in 2019, it looks bad, but, you know, that's... It'll depend what way you come at it. If that's what you want. I mean, there is a point where, because Jim Ross is this, like, what is he, 50 at this point? 50, something like that? Maybe late 40s, early 50s? Anyway. And he's just like...
Well, how old is he now? Let's find out.
I think he's late 60s, I think.
So then he'd be late 40s here.
Late 40s. So, like, JR's like, he does not know what to say.
And he has no idea.
There is... And I don't feel that the World Wrestling Federation at this point in its run had sensitivity training to anything. So
I'm going to go with no. It's just, I wouldn't be me if I didn't scoff at this, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And I would not be me if, yeah. We're both coming at it exactly where people would think we would at this. So Val Venus comes down because Godfather wants him to come and see
and
this.
Then, like, Droz talking about shaving his legs, and Albert's like, did you shave your legs? He's like, well, yeah, my hair's going to stick out otherwise, which is a valid concern if you're wearing nylons.
Droz put the work in here.
He did.
Also, it would not surprise me if Droz secretly liked to be fucked by a woman with a strap on while he wears a dress. He looks like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not as anything wrong with that. You do you?
No, not at all.
Godfather's facing Gangrel. Godfather brings Val Venus out so he can see. They bring out Droz and Albert. Albert's very annoyed. Albert's tripping over himself. Droz is enjoying himself. JR's like, he's grinding for God's sake.
I love that he did the grind. I thought that was funny. I laughed.
And then we get a match with Gangrel versus Godfather. Now, at one point, Jim Ross says, with a straight face, earning every penny of his paycheck for the year, you don't want to turn your back on an athlete the caliber of Gangrel.
I remember that, and I laughed really hard.
Really?
I was like, why? Because he'll bite you?
Oh, my God. Anyway, so they start. Then Val Venus gets attacked by Droz and Prince and Albert. Gangrel takes out Godfather, helps the other two. Okay, because Godfather wins the match first, sorry. And then the attack happens. And then while the three of them, Gangrel, Droz, and Albert, are beating up Val Venus and the Godfather, Edge and Christian run down. They're just trying to get Gangrel away from it because, you know, they now want to be nice people and are not really wanting to be...
Because the Brood have been, like, babyface-ish, but Gangrel has not really. And there seems to be dissension there.
Yes, so the Edge and Christian are kind of trying to get Gangrel out of there, so the Brood dramatics continue.
They do continue, and Gangrel does not look pleased that he's being dragged away from the situation. Does Gangrel just want to be in an alliance, like, against the God? Like, does he really want to be in an alliance with Droz and Albert? Is that his choice? Like, make better life decisions.
Yeah, I'd be hitching my truck to Edge and Christian all day, every day.
Yeah, 100%.
Then we get Stephanie with Tess. She wants him to be okay. He says he'll be fine. He says, I'm a man, I'll be fine. Which is just...
Whatever, Tess.
She's a different person, everybody. This
she still has that, like, dopey look, like maybe part of her brain's been removed or something. Like, what did The Undertaker do to her? Because she just... It's this... vacant, like, oh Tess, I just want you to be okay. It's like the same as when she's like, the only time I'm safe is when I'm with my dad. Like, it's creepy. It looks like she's been body snatched or something.
That leads us to Tess versus Joey Abs. Tess has kind of got the upper hand when Shane forcibly brings Stephanie out to watch what's happening as the Mean Street Posse run in, and they all beat up Tess, while Shane McMahon, to put you in the picture, if you don't watch these shows while we're doing it, Shane McMahon is so sort of aggressive in the way that he is making his sister watch these guys beat up the guy that she's dating, that Jerry Lawler says, bit far, Shane, bit far.
Yep. You know it's not good when Jerry Lawler is actually the voice of reason? Like, It's just not great, especially because Jerry Lawler's on side with Shane McMahon normally. Like, normally he's all about the corporation and all of their shenanigans and kissing their asses and stuff. And I mean, Shane, like, it's not like he just takes Stephanie out. Like, he's like shaking her around, like violently, as though he wants to cause her physical harm. It looks like he is about to assault his sister, and it's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. So the storyline's continuing. We'll see where it goes. Up next, we go out.
Because the whole thing is Shane doesn't like that Test and Stephanie are like potentially an item because he's a wrestler and Stephanie shouldn't date a wrestler. And so he's
Which
gonna
does
like.
play into the idea that McMahons are just like using all their wrestlers, you know? It does play into that, but yeah, I mean the thing
It
is, I mean
does, but
if
it's
Test.
just like, I mean, he's basically just like, I mean, trying to control her life, which I'm not a big fan of. And he's a heel, so it's fine. Like, you know, it's similar to the Ken Shamrock, Ryan Shamrock situation. Like, I want to hear what Stephanie has to say a little bit more at this point. And like, that's not something you're going to hear me say probably a lot going forward on Retro Raw. Like, once she becomes, you know, the Stephanie that we all know and loathe, then I'm not going to be like, oh, I want to hear more from Stephanie McMahon. But right now, it's like, no, let her speak. Like, let her do what she wants to do. I want to hear what Linda has to say about the situation, too.
So I mean Stephanie is kind of talking, but she's not really saying anything of any note. Then we go outside to China has had her car spray painted, and she's upset about it. Now, usually WWF do a pretty good job of having like law enforcement people. These were men in black Levi jeans and a t-shirt that said police on the back of it.
My favorite thing about the police shirts. Did you notice that the font was different on each one of them?
Yep, it was atrocious.
Was so funny. It was like they put out a casting call for extras and said, but you have to make your own shirt with iron-on letters, and they bought different ones. Like, there's no way they provided these shirts, right? Or if
No,
they
no,
did, like, why do they have different police shirts? Oh, it cracked me up. This is my favorite thing.
they And then China, like, she's really going at it to be like annoyed. She's like, you know, it was X-Pac and Road Dogg and did it. But I mean, to give her credit, I mean, you can tell she's lying. Like, you can tell that she is like
Of
making
course
this
she's
up.
lying. Well, it's not like, I mean, are you saying that DX might have a history of falsely vandalizing a place and then claiming that it was someone else?
But
Because, oh, wait, that's happened before.
she does a good enough job to these idiot policemen to be like, you know, yes, it was them. Yes, I saw them. Yeah, but she
Yeah,
won't.
she's like, yeah, it was X-Pac and Road Dogg. They did it right in front of my face. I don't know where the hell they are. They went that
But
way.
she's quite clever, and what she's doing is whenever she answers a question of something that she's lying about, she then just gets shouty to try and like
Because she's
deflect.
upset. Because she's saying that she's like, you know, so upset at the situation. So of course she's going to be shouty.
She kicks the car. It says DX on the front bonnet. It says break it down on the side. So, you know, we've got more. There's more to come. Then we get Al Snow versus D'Lo Brown for the hardcore title. Now, this match is exactly what I want in a hardcore match. I want them going to different places. I want people getting hit with shovels. I want concessions. I want catering involved. I want a forklift that somebody splashes on top of a table. This was completely for me. It probably wasn't for you, but it was for me. We do have Midian involved at one point and dumps some tables out of D'Lo. And Al Snow gets to retain his title. I'm curious as to how you felt about this. Did you hate it? Did you like it?
Was just it happened. It was fine. It was kind of boring. I did kind of like the machinery shenanigans with him being on the lift and then, you know, jumping onto the tables or whatever from that. That was enjoyable enough, but
It's
it
weird because
just
I thought before we started watching these shows, I figured that these things you'd like them because they're a bit bonkers. I always thought you would kind of like these ones. It's always surprising me that it doesn't click for you.
These kinds of matches, like if they're really bonkers, like because you know I liked The Rock and Mankind in the Empty Arena one, where you know they're answering phones and going all over the, like maybe it's just that I'm not as I've never really that been that into hardcore match stipulations in the first place. Like if there's not a decent story behind it, so it's fine, it's fun enough. It's not like it makes me turn off or anything, but it's like okay, they're brawling all over the arena, like they normally brawl all over the arena. I think if we saw it less often, then maybe I would be more into it. But it's starting to feel a bit samey.
Then we
Some of the
had
spots were inventive. It was fine.
Yeah, I get if the hardcore title kind of style works for you, then I guess it's fun, and if not, I guess it's not. Then we had Police Looking for Road Dog and X-Pac. Sergeant Slaughter and Tony Garea do not want to. They're being old school, you know. They're not ratting the boys in. And then fucking Howard Finkel, after X-Pac came to his rescue last year with Jeff Jarrett for the head shaving shit.
Oh,
And
yeah.
he rats him out. Fuck you, Finkel. Pissant.
Yeah, seriously, that's not loyalty.
I feel like if somebody saves me in that regard, look, I'll turn a blind eye to where the bodies are buried once or twice. If it gets
Of
like three times,
course,
then I'm like,
we've all
right,
been there.
I'm not going to do it more than like two or three times, unless you pay me. Maybe. Anyway,
Fair.
so Road Dogg versus Val Venus, and the police come out during the match with X-Pac handcuffed, and then come in and cuff Road Dogg during the match. They wouldn't even let him finish the match.
They really should have let him finish the match, I think. It's not like he's going anywhere. It's not like he was trying to escape. This is where I noticed the police t-shirts, by the way, and I cracked up. Val Venus versus Road Dogg also just seems like the battle of men who want to gyrate at each other.
Yes, it does. It does. Do you know? I can't. If we're supposed to take that these are policemen seriously. And with their outfits, it's very hard to do that. I mean, good on them. Just saying, you know what? We're not going to continue watching this performance. These men need to be arrested for the crimes they've committed.
Yeah, true. I mean, at least they were committing to the role, if not the wardrobe.
They committed to one. They then get put in the police car. Up next is Jeff Jarrett defending his Intercontinental Championship against Chaz, which Jim Ross says on commentary, Chaz must know some people in high places to get this title shot. So even Jim Ross,
Why is Chaz getting a title shot? I don't understand.
you know it's bad when JR is even questioning it in commentary in the realm of the
Yep.
world. So also, here's what I don't get. So we're meant to believe that Chaz, he's just a kid from New Jersey. He just wants to have fun. He looked when he was walking down the aisle for an Intercontinental Championship match like he was walking to the bus for work.
He really did. You're not
That's
wrong.
not how you walk
He
towards
like
an Intercontinental title show. That's how you walk towards a 7 a.m. shift start, and you have to get up at like 5:40 because the buses only run once an hour. So you have to get the 6 a.m. one because the 7 a.m. one will get you in late. So you're annoyed that you have to get up early because of the bus schedules.
I'm just so like I'm so baffled by the fact that they thought this was a good idea, like to have him just be Chaz. Because the thing is, when he was a Sister of Love and when he was a headbanger, I really, really liked Headbanger Mosh, right? Like, I thought he was a good wrestler. I thought his matches were great. I enjoyed them quite a lot. What is it? Like, what sort of charisma bypass has he undergone that, like, he not only does he not have charisma or character, he also, like, can't wrestle all that well anymore. Like, what has happened?
Well, also, the problem here is that we're meant to believe that Chaz is like, this is what he's always wanted to be. He's just wanted to be himself. Never be yourself. You're the dullest
No.
man alive. You
Don't be
literally.
yourself.
The only
Being
thing.
another person would be a better idea for you, Chaz.
The only thing that makes Chaz mildly more interesting than Steve Blackman is that he has a very hot bodybuilder girlfriend and that he
Oh, she's
has.
great on the outside during this.
And then he. Sometimes he wears like underwear things that have got wee smiley faces on them, which is mildly interesting. But apart from that, not far off Blackman.
Like, his shorts baffle me. I don't really understand what he's going for.
So Chaz, so Deborah and Mariana end up kind of going at it on the outside, which I pop for big. I love a good old school cat fight on the outside. If the two characters are just going for it, like I would
It would
really.
be helpful if Jerry Lawler weren't being like, "It's the battle of the puppies, shut up and die."
Did he not say something else about getting fed or something? There was a really bad line that he used about like, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't want to remember.
But yeah, like this is something that like I think that if it like I feel like Lana today, like in wrestling, if Lana had like in 2016 been like, I'm not gonna wrestle, I'm just gonna be. So, like an almost Deborah-esque valet, and there was another character who had a similar valet. They and you know, at one point those two kind of went at it in that kind of style, and people would go
Like, you could have
crazy
had
for it.
Lana versus Zelina Vega on the outside instead of trying to have them in a wrestling
Exactly,
program.
and people would have went nuts for the two of them on the outside. Because then it's you can have a brawl, you can hide the weaknesses of the performance. So but anyway, so the distraction ends up costing Chaz the match. Jarrett hits the stroke, gets the win. Then,
but like, does it though? Like, does it? Because that's the thing, is
doesn't
like,
distract Jeff Jarrett at all.
It doesn't distract Jeff Jarrett at all. And the thing is, like, Deborah gets up on the apron, right, and undoes her jacket, and she's getting her tits out, and that somehow distracts Jeff Jarrett more. I don't know if it distracts Jeff Jarrett, but that doesn't cause the, you know, the distraction finish, because Chaz actually gets a pinfall attempt on Jeff Jarrett after Deborah does that. So I'm starting to question Deborah's effectiveness here, because it's like, it's more the brawl that then Chaz is like, oh, what is going on? Two ladies are fighting. And then Jeff Jarrett gets the win. But it's not like, because they were like, Deborah turned out to be the difference maker. It's like, no, Deborah almost just cost Jeff Jarrett the match.
There you go. And after the match, though, Chaz is about to get hit with the guitar when the man formerly known as Thrasher runs down and clears house, and they do a high five. And then,
like, has he always had a little bit of a gut, or is that
no? I think, like, that's been the time off.
Development.
It must have been a development,
because no. And also, if you do have a little, like, if you are getting a little pudgy, that's fine. But then don't, like, cinch your belt to accentuate it. And tuck in your shirt.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just a poor choice.
Also, after the match, when, like, Chaz and Thrasher are celebrating, what? Now, did Chaz have chewing gum in his mouth? Because he either... So he spat in the air and then tried to catch the spit again.
Yes, and then it goes all over his chin.
I mean,
His character trait. Apparently.
That's how he has fun?
I guess. I don't understand any of this. And, like, does Thrasher have a name? Like, is he just a dude? Like, are they back together in just, like, their least interesting incarnation? What even is this?
It's bad.
I mean, it's Salvatore Sincere turns into Tom Brandy all over again without the charisma of Mark Miro to carry it. And you know how dire a statement that is.
That is a real indictment of this.
It's not good. I really like Mariana.
Yeah, she was really good. Then we got Edge versus the Big Boss Man. Pretty decent match again. Boss Man's actually a lot better than I think people remember him being.
He's great. I love the Big Boss Man.
Yeah, he's just like a good bully, you know? And he argues with the ref, he gets rolled up, he's up after the two, and then he clotheslines Edge, but then Edge spears him. Edge gets a kind of sudden win, and then Bossman batters Edge with a nightstick, handcuffs him to the ring, then Christian runs down, drops kick Bossman, but then instead of following up with it, he ends up getting hit with a nightstick, and he too gets handcuffed and beaten up, and no Gangrel to make a save. So the story continues, and I think the compliment I would give to this is it is having Bossman beating up Edge and Christian, having them both handcuffed, there's a way to do that that would really bury Edge and Christian, and they didn't do it in a way that happened. So I think that was a testament to it.
I think because they were handcuffed too, like, it made more sense, because if he were just, like, beating them up and they had to stay down, then that would be one thing. But I think it came off really well. Like, I mean, I enjoyed the match with Edge and Big Bossman. Edge's spear is so terrible. Like, it's real bad. And I'm a big Edge fan. And I know his spear never gets, like, amazing. But, oh boy.
What one was worse?
The past couple matches that he's...
This one or Godfather? Which one was worse?
Oh, man. They're both, like... He barely even touches them. Like, I don't know which one was worse, but they're both atrocious.
Well, the other problem is that Bossman and Godfather are much bigger guys than him. So you almost feel that when he does a spear to a bigger guy, he has to almost, like, take more of a run at it.
He does, but doesn't he almost look like he's, like, stopping just before he gets to them and then just gives them, like, a wee cuddle and then they fall down?
Essentially, yeah, that's what it looks like.
It's not good. Like, it's not good at all. I think that maybe... Because he's great at wrestling. Like, I love his matches. But it's just this finisher is not the most effective thing. And I know he goes on to still use it, but it looks real bad. But no, and Big Boss Man and Christian afterwards... It didn't even occur to me that could have buried them or could have made them look bad, because it worked. Like, I think everyone played their roles really well, and it's kind of cool to see Christian doing a little bit more too, because Christian always seems like he's been the guy in the background. Like, Edge has been the one who wears the different gear and is in more of the matches, and a lot of times the brood pairing would be Edge and Gangrel for whatever reason. I don't understand that. But it's kind of nice to see like Christian and Edge, they're together. This is great. Like they are the pair. And that's kind of what I want to see going forward because I love Edge and Christian.
Then we got China and Triple H on the mic. I actually thought they came across really well here together because, like, China was doing her bit about continuing the lie, and then Triple H somehow hates The Rock and just wants to beat him, which is really how he feels. Because there's a see in 2000 when Rock and Triple H are good together, like there's a real thing that you can tell that Triple H is not happy that The Rock. People see The Rock a lot higher than him, and you can tell
Because The
it.
Rock is better than him.
But you can tell it gets to him. Like, it really gets to him, you know? You can even see it in these early days. You can see Triple H. It's there. You can see it inside of him.
Oh, yeah.
Then we get a weird match. Mr. Ass versus Meat. It's a real thing I'm saying. Meat just gets the absolute shit beaten out of him. He gets a couple of body slams in. But Famouser, that's it. And then, but my favourite thing is after the match, Jacqueline just decides to start screaming at Billy Gunn, and then China just punches her and DDTs her, and then
The visual of Jacqueline squaring up to Billy Gunn was great. I loved it. I loved like Spitfire Jacqueline, just like, because she's so short, right? Like she was like 5 foot, like 5'1", something like that. So she's just like staring up at Billy Gunn, and Billy Gunn's just like looking down at her, like, what? Like, who is this tiny person coming after me? It was great. I loved it.
Billy Gunn DDTs Meat, and then they spray paint on they spray paint all over them. Funnily enough, the same color as the spray paint on the car.
Commentary made me laugh. They're like, is that the same color as the spray paint on the car? Oh my goodness, could it be that they have access to spray paint? Yes, I think we understand where this is going.
Hey,
But I mean, Meat and Jacqueline had to lie there for quite a while, and I don't think like spray painting DX over them was really as effective and cool as a visual as it was meant to be. It just didn't really work out. But
I guess that's because in
yeah.
WCW, the NWO's calling card was spray paint NWO. But it worked
Which is
because.
why JR's like, oh, this is so original, such an original concept with the spray paint. Like, he's going on and on about it. But they won't say, obviously, like, they won't reference WCW, but you can tell that it's in reference to WCW.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a rare instance. Well, not a rare, but it's an instance where it didn't work. You know, worked in WCW because NWO were a pack. There was loads of them. So it was believable that the NWO as a sort of gang could beat people up and then spray paint them. Whereas it's like, I don't know. Didn't work as well here. Up next, though, we get Big Show and Hardcore Holly taking on Kane. And
Because
Kane.
this was supposed to be a tag team match, but
X-Pac's
X-Pac has
away.
been arrested, so now it's still the Big Show and Bob Holly versus Kane.
Exactly. And there's one point where Kane attempts a drop kick.
Couldn't they like let Kane find another partner?
Maybe on that short notice, he just couldn't find one.
I mean,
Couldn't
that's
find.
unfortunate. Poor Kane.
I mean, there's maybe somebody that could have been his partner. His brother.
Right? That's like knowing what you told me from Heat now, it makes more sense that The Undertaker comes out after this, but like I was so confused. And it's also, it's the Big Show and Bob Holly. Like, why?
Hardcore Holly, one of my favorites. Brilliant. I just love how delusional he is. And it's like, for all the things I will ever say bad about Vince Russo, he got Bob Holly over. And that cannot be denied as an accomplishment, right?
True.
That is a difficult thing to do after he had been race car driver, vroom vroom man.
I mean, I miss Race Car Driver Vroom Vroom Man. So maybe that's part of my saltiness toward Hardcore Holly is that he no longer has vroom vroom noises and spectacular, spectacular hair.
I love the idea, like, if you ever saw Barry Windham in the Four Horsemen or like NWA World Champion, you're like, nah, not a stalker though.
No, not the stalker. Not the same.
So we have this match, and then
But so I have a question about this
sure.
match. Is the Big Show supposed to be a babyface still?
Big Show is exploring where his personality may go.
Does he know how to have a personality?
He's
I mean, I know
working
that
on
he
it.
goes on to,
He's
but.
working on it. But I think the problem here is that Big Show is meant to be playing a kind of a you don't know where his allegiances lie, you don't know what side he's on. He's kind of supposed to play a nuanced character. But the problem is
I
he's.
don't think that's really coming across very well
No, he's not
because
playing it
he's the
very
Big
well.
Show.
Yeah, he just looks the same at all times. I mean, maybe it didn't help that in WCW he had to turn like 25 times. So he just like ended up in like a just looking the same and just never tried.
Well, because I mean, if you're going to turn face and heel like five times a show, like the Big Show tends to do, then it's hard to really change up your look that often.
They signed the Big Show to a 10-year deal and intended for him to main event WrestleMania with Steve Austin. And within 5 months, he is teaming with Hardcore Holly.
I mean, yeah, within 5 months, he's teaming with Hardcore Holly. Within 1 day, he was already super ineffective at his job.
Like, 1 minute.
Yes, like my favorite thing about the Big Show debut is that it's the most Big Show thing of all time. And that's the thing, I'm a fan of the Big Show. Like, I love the Big Show later on, but he is atrocious here. And I don't understand, like, who you're supposed to be cheering for. And then, like, because Kane is awesome. Like, Kane is a very sympathetic character. Love him forever. But I don't want The Undertaker to go back with him, because then everybody's just a heel.
Yes, exactly. Then we had, so during the match is going on, Kane at one point tries a drop kick on the Big Show, doesn't really work, but at least he tried. Kane is then getting beaten up, and here comes Undertaker. Kane chokeslams Hardcore Holly, gets the win. Big Show is glaring at Undertaker. Kane clips,
because Big Show is so ineffective at his job that he just forgets that he's in a match, basically.
Well, also, I mean,
so Kane just wins.
I guess you could just say he doesn't really care about Hardcore Holly. So he was just more, he wasn't bothered enough to help him, which would be the most Big Show thing ever. But Undertaker is, so Kane clips Big Show from behind, and then both brothers are beating up the Big Show. It's actually a pretty cool spot where Kane's going to try and suplex the Big Show, but he can't quite do it, so Undertaker and Kane suplex him together.
Commentary was very good there, JR. I was like, we don't see people suplex the Big Show.
Yeah, the ring shook.
Yeah.
They do the double suplex, and then Undertaker splits Big Show open, which continues, you know, I love blood, geez it, kind of thing that Undertaker's got going on. And, we're led to believe that, you know, Big Show doesn't know what he's doing, and Kane is now getting some help from his brother, and that's the story so far.
And the Undertaker was very clearly sending a message to the Big Show, but also sending a message to Stone Cold Steve Austin, because if this happens in their first blood match, then he will win the World Wrestling Federation title. Yeah, it was fine. Chair shots to the head, not my fave, never will be, don't really like them. But the storytelling of it was effective enough. Other than that, I don't understand who the Big Show is right now or why he's here, and I don't think he really cares to explain it to me. So that's my main issue, I would say. And I don't want Kane and Undertaker together. Like, I like Kane. I like Kane and X-Pac. Kane and X-Pac is the pairing that I want. So I don't know. But it seems like they're going forward with some sort of storytelling. I don't know where it leads. I don't know this portion of Kane and the Undertaker and their saga. So I am kind of mildly intrigued by it, which is good, instead of just like having overwhelming dread.
That's a step up. Then we get the main event as cage match with Triple H and The Rock. So, I mean, again, this would usually seem like not up your alley because you've not enjoyed their matches so far. Was this match any better for you, or was it the same as your usual thoughts on them?
Kind of same as usual. Like, it's one of those things where it's them and they're in a cage, and some of the shenanigans and stuff were fine. And, you know, they kept going. Like, it kept going and going and going, because Triple H exits the cage, but the ref is down, so we can't declare him the winner. So they get back in the cage, and then it just keeps going. And I thought the finish was clever with both of them escaping, like, almost at the same time, but The Rock, like, just barely manages to win. So it's one of those things where, like, I think I would like this match in a video package a lot more than I enjoyed sitting through all of the minutes of it. How long was this?
I think they went about 15 minutes all in.
Okay. Because it was pretty long for a Raw match. It wasn't necessarily like pay-per-view long or anything, but it was pretty long for a Raw match. And it's just not really two characters that are for me right now against each other, because I wasn't really heavily invested in either one of them winning. Like, I know that I'm supposed to be behind The Rock, and I am more behind The Rock than I am behind Triple H, because I don't like Triple H, but it was fine. Like, was this a good match? I'm going to ask you.
I think it was good. I don't think it was, like, I don't think it's anywhere near where their chemistry gets. Because, like, Triple H... Because, like,
I think that ladder match they had was better.
I think the ladder match was better because they had more room to do bells and whistles in that one. Mm-hmm. And plus, there was the story. I think the story there was, like, Triple H valiantly trying to go after The Rock, who had been an arsehole or whatever. So the story was more there. It was in the garden. It was a ladder match. There's a lot of stuff around it. I think Triple H is trying to learn how to be a main event level wrestler, and he's not there yet. So I think that for me, I can see that he is getting better. Like, it's not he's getting worse. But I think really once he kind of works those matches with Mick Foley and really is able to like get a bit of momentum behind him, unless I've just drastically made up an era of when he was really good. I don't think I have. But I like the whole kind of fake, like, Triple H won when the ref was out, and there was some good shenanigans on it. I thought China played a role really well. It worked for me. I mean, I'm invested in the two characters. I guess that helps a lot for me.
Because I'm not saying that it was like objectively bad or terrible, and I'm not gonna like shit all over it.
The fact that you've not made a groan or done or anything like that shows that it's a step up from what you usually feel like they have.
Exactly. So, like, I'm trying to be fair to it, but I can't say that, like, when The Rock versus Triple H in a cage match was happening, I was super, super invested in the whole thing either, which, there are just other characters that I enjoy more on this program.
I mean, it's good that they're kind of, we saw from last week and stuff, we saw The Undertaker's obviously really struggling right now, so they really do need to make another main eventer. And there's not a lot of people on the heel side that you could argue would be in that spot who has been there a long time, who's done enough stuff. So as of right now, he is kind of the choice. And could you think of anybody else that I'm not thinking of that would be at this point just kind of we should go with him right now?
On the heel side?
Because we can even see they're trying with Billy Gunn, trying in the most loosest of terms.
They're not trying, though. He was actually, he would be my choice. Like, I would choose Billy Gunn over Triple H. I think he's better than Triple H. And if they hadn't completely just, like, nerfed everything about Billy Gunn leading up to King of the Ring and then immediately following King of the Ring, then I think they could have made Billy Gunn into a main event star. But they didn't, and they've chosen instead to just treat him like a big old joke. And I don't think that's very helpful, because I think, like, he has charisma and he has good matches. So I think that they could have done a lot more with Billy Gunn, but they're really not trying with Billy Gunn at all.
I think, like, the other thing with Triple H is that he has a lot of kind of, like, I know you've not enjoyed a lot of his stuff, but he has a lot of, like, lineage and stuff that's happened. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was the King of the Ring. He was in DX with Michaels. He was the leader of DX. He was IC champ. He was with the corporation. He's got China with him. He has all this stuff around him as well.
He's Baron Corbin with a list of accomplishments and is still very boring.
I do not think he's Baron Corbin. At this point now, I think he's much better than Corbin. 3 months ago,
I think he's improving. But
3 months ago, I would have 100% said, yeah, I can totally see it. I think he is getting better. But I think that when they were making the choice, I get why they went with him. And I mean, luckily he gets good. I mean, if they had went, but then the Billy Gunn thing, I'm curious about, like, if they did strap the rocket to Billy Gunn, would he have got over the same way? Because his gimmick is kind of more, like, sexualized in some ways,
mm-hmm.
And that doesn't tend to be, like, those gimmicks tend to be more mid-cardy, like a Val Venus or a Billy Gunn. So I don't know if he would have had to kind of transition away from the Mr. Ass part of it.
Right, like, and who is it saying lean into the Mr. Ass thing? Is that, like, a Billy Gunn directive? Like, I really am very fond of my own ass, and I want this to be my character and nothing else? Or is that, like, Vince McMahon thinks it's hilarious that he has a butt? I don't know.
I don't,
like,
know. But, I mean,
that's something that actually, like, I mean, if you ever interview Billy Gunn, I would like to know that.
Yeah, so would I. Well, I also, the other thing is later on in his career, he does end up in Billy and Chuck, which is similarly kind of... Maybe that's just where they go with him. Maybe there's, like, Billy Gunn equals sex.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a very attractive individual.
And if you were going to pick a wrestler to be with and, like, oh, is this a good... Because, look, if you have a brain, you should be thinking when you meet someone, how do I think they're going to look in 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
The woman that married Billy Gunn, she's locked out.
Yeah.
He looks exactly the same. He's in better condition.
He looks amazing. Like, he does. He has the fountain of youth.
And I've seen him, like, close up when I've interviewed him. He does not look like sandpaper, as some wrestlers do.
Right.
And he doesn't look like a lesbian version of the bird lady from Home Alone 2, like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
He does not look like her. Greg the Hammer Valentine is an enigma.
I still love Robert's Robert's calling my Greg Valentine in the face like he'd been sold into wrestling.
Oh, it cracks me up every time. That's like all I think of when I see Greg the Hammer Valentine, and I'm like, Robert, you weren't wrong.
He ruined it for the rest of us. Okay, so this episode of Raw, where's the thumb?
I think this is a thumbs in the middle show for me. It was fine. Like, it was fine to watch through. I didn't, like, it wasn't painfully agonizing to watch through, but I was confused by so much of it that, like, it was a little hard to get invested in some of it. Like, I didn't understand why Albert and Draws were in dresses. Like, I didn't understand why The Undertaker was suddenly with Kane, ? So it was just, I don't know. It was just kind of a show that was there, and I watched it, and it was fine. I don't know if it advanced, like, tons and tons of stuff, but it wasn't, like, bad either. There was nothing egregious on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
It's like a mild thumbs up for me. It'd be like between a 6.5 and a 7 out of 10, I think. Because I think the good stuff was really effective, like the Hardy Boys and the Acolytes.
I am pleased about that.
And I thought the main event was good, and I liked the hardcore match, but, like, Chaz getting an Intercontinental title shot, and, like, the Draws and Albert and drag stuff, I don't know. It was fine, but it just was a bit, meh. So, yeah, overall, I would say it's a mild thumbs up. Actually, I'm bumping it up to a 7 for 6.5 based on China's DDT to Jackie. So,
I did enjoy Jackie facing off with Billy Gunn. That made my day.
So next week on Raw, let me just see what we have coming up without giving everything away. Let me read some of the matches that we have. So next week we have, can't tell you that one. You're not going to like it, but the Hardys defend their tag titles against Val Venus and the Godfather, but at least they're a team.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got credentials, so it's fine.
Credentials of losing? Why are they getting a tag title shot? I guess the Godfather did beat Gangrel, but that's not a tag match situation.
True. Al Snow fights Draws for the hardcore title. We get Test against the Mean Street Posse. And the main event, actually, it's pretty interesting. No, I can't tell you that one. Anyway. Sorry, I always have to read through the stuff, like skim it. And I need to think about if I say that a certain match happens, am I giving away like an
like
angle?
Something
or
earlier on in the
show. Yeah, so I'm airing this out of caution. So sometimes if you say, why did you not say this match? It's like, well, that match is comes out of this angle.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to do though is there is something that happens on Heat this week that plays into Raw that you would probably want to see. So
okay.
I will either make sure that you are sent the Retro Heat early and you can decide whether you want to watch it or not, but it would probably be within your interest to know about that first.
Okay. So just tell me, like, time code wise in Heat where I should be watching and I can check it out.
Okay. Should mention that on June 30th, WWF inked a 3-year deal with Chris Irvin, Chris Jericho. His contract with WCW expires on July 27th. WWF immediately announced the signing on their website. Jericho still, at this point, has a handful of house shows left because Eric Bischoff made the decision not to use him on TV. From when he decided.
So his contract isn't even up with WCW and they announced his signing?
Well, they're allowed to. Because I don't know how the contracts work, but basically he was allowed to negotiate a new deal and sign a contract elsewhere, but he obviously couldn't start until he'd finished. And his,
okay.
So Bischoff didn't want him to be on TV. Jericho was considered the number one personnel project of 1999 for Jim Ross to handle. They also had wanted Benoit, who was considered about equal or second priority, but he re-signed with WCW. Because even like Big Show, Jericho, we're starting to see that the younger WCW guys are coming to WWF.
That's so interesting.
The tides are turning. What else has been going on this week? ECW have signed a deal with TNN. They're going to be running Friday nights. It's going to be a Friday night action sports block that will have ECW, Roller Jam, Rodeo, and Demolition Derbies.
Wow.
So that's a thing. In WWF... Fuck me!
I can't really help out.
Why
I don't
is the Observer
have any of this
so
stuff
long?
In front of me.
Vince McMahon cracked his tailbone in a motorcycle accident on the 4th of July. He was coming around a corner, was hit by a driver backing his car out of his driveway and knocked him off his motorcycle. He's a bit shaken up, but he was back producing Raw the next day and in the office on July 6th. So, doesn't take a day off, that guy.
No, he really doesn't. I mean, that sounds painful. That
King of
sounds super painful.
the Ring did a 1.13 buy rate, which means that 440,000 people ordered it on pay-per-view.
Poor
So,
souls.
at this point, they are still deciding what they're going to do with Sunday Night Heat because obviously there's not going to be specific tapings for Heat anymore, and now that they're going to be doing SmackDown, it's going to be they're going to have to decide what they're going to do. But there was some talk of doing one live Heat per month and then the rest of them being taped, but they're still trying to figure it out as to how they're going to deal with it. We do have a plan, by the way, of how we're going to handle the whole Heat SmackDown scenario, and we'll tell you guys in a couple of weeks what is happening with that. What else? With Rina Mero, there was talk that the WWF would consider her appearing on Nitro as a contract breach, because her contract specifies that if she does breach it, then she forfeits any future merchandise royalties. But obviously, she's left, so like,
Right.
there's no way to do it. The Big Boss Man on July 10th appeared on America's Most Wanted. There
He
was a
did?
wanted guy on the show who greatly resembled the Boss Man, causing a lot of calls that the guy they were looking for is on WWF television, and they brought in the Boss Man to do a joke about it, which is fantastic.
That's amazing. I swear, everything that I see about the Big Boss Man just makes me love him more.
I know, it's great, right? So Mick Foley apparently got more than 1,000 get well cards.
Aw, that's sweet.
There's a story in the Calgary Sun about Davey Boy Smith. He's back to training twice a day and hopes to be back in the WWF by the end of the summer. He doesn't feel any pain in his spine regarding the lawsuit. Bulldog said that he was trying to remain neutral, publicly saying that Martha and Brett have the right to do what they want with the lawsuit, but I don't point any fingers. And he's been telling people that he won't take any suplexes, but he thinks he can work around it. We should say that Bulldog does come back to the WWF at one point, and it's been proven later on that he physically just should not have come back. So
Yeah.
it's a shame. But the WWF are going to be doing an Owen Hart specific issue of WWF magazine with all profits going to the Alberta Children's Hospital. And GTV, which is supposed to, because at this point Goldust is out of action with a back injury, and GTV is supposed to be a way to keep him going by having this thing that he can be revealed with when he returns, which ultimately he does not, so it becomes pointless. So,
Okay.
Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, find me on Twitter at Sandra Ruth RW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to hear us talk King of the Ring 99, along with tons of other bonus content. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. The Mick Foley story is really, really good. Like, I enjoyed it quite a lot. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to see Awesome Kong, along with other things that will be announced post haste.
Yes, post haste indeed. So to play us out, I mean, let me just double check if it's on YouTube, because what I want to do is I want to play Hulkamaniacs in Heaven. Is it Hulkamaniacs? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I've never heard of this.
Hulkster in Heaven
Hulkster in Heaven.
is what it's called.
Wow. Wow.
I'm going to play you the full 4 minutes and 44 seconds of this, because this is not one we should chop up. We should hear the full, inspirational message that Hulk Hogan wants to send you in this song. So, ladies and gentlemen, here is Hulk Hogan with Hulkster in Heaven. We'll be back next week. Bye!
Amazing. Bye.
I saw it on TV. I guess it'll be one empty seat when I wrestle at Wembley. I used to tear my shirt, but now you tore my heart. I knew you were a Hulkamaniac right from the very start.
Right from the start, you were my friend.
I'll see
this
you
is not the
again. To heaven.
Heaven, heaven, heaven.
We'll tag up again.
Heaven.
I wish you were here at ringside to cheer me on tonight. The spotlight now grows dim, and now it's not on me. The prayers we said together are still our guarantee. You are my friend. I'll see you. I'm not afraid to